This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Choose from over 85,000 titles and get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/BobbyBlackWolf. More information after the midpoint break. We played through what we could of Motor Storm Apocalypse before we threw our controller, and we'll tell you why we did that. But first, we'll have a report live from Day 18 of PlayStation Under Siege. Tonight is May 8th, 2011, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And What Up G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
18 days holed up in a compound without online stuff. It makes somebody go mad. Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry and sometimes reminisce about gaming's history, but not really tonight. If you're joining us live here on All Games Radio, head on over to our chat room, chat.allgames.com. I'll be attempting to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night, and a little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Bobby Blackwell Show, all one word, or toll-free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can email us by using the form on our website, bobbyblackwolf.com. So, a lot of PSN news this week that maybe a lot of people didn't see because of world events that occurred after this show went off the air last week. That's kind of been dominating the news, which has actually been good for, you know, somebody like Sony who's having a PR nightmare. Nobody's really paying attention to them in the mainstream news right now. But they're still having problems, and PSN is not up. PlayStation Network has still not come back up as of Sunday night, May 8th. It's because they felt that they need to test it a little bit more. And I got to say this, and I'm going to say this in the beginning. This is not going to be a very popular thing I'm going to say, and it's because of my background doing large database systems for many, my background is I'm a programmer. I've got 11 years of experience in the regular industry, not the gaming industry. And, I've worked on some very important projects and huge databases for, I've had security clearance because I worked on defense contracts and things like that. So I kind of know a little bit about what it's like to overhaul a system that is currently being used for very important things. And I guess reading what I was able to read and what they have released and what some people have said, which is a lot of hearsay, obviously, you know, I don't know the internals of how Sony's network works. It would have been a miracle had they actually gotten it back up this week, considering everything that they are claiming that they are going to have to do to the system, because it is a complete rewrite of code that is currently housing 77 million accounts. And it's the data probably doesn't change all that much, but it's the security of the database and mainly how it is accessed from the outside. So that means they had to go to every single piece of code that accessed that data, and they had to go through and change it and QC it, quality control, quality assurance, and do all that and make sure that it was not vulnerable to attack. And there's a lot of that kind of code. Every website that logs you into the PlayStation Network account or Curiosity account, every line of code inside the PS3 has to be changed. Everything that, you know, I mean, I don't even know, there might be games that need to be patched with new code. Basically, anything that calls on that data needs to be changed, and there's a lot of that out there because all they've been doing is adding to the system since it first came out. The PlayStation Network came out with the PS3, and I believe it was rushed to begin with because the Xbox 360 came out. You know, obviously, Xbox Live was around for the original Xbox, and the Xbox 360 came out, and Xbox Live actually really took off. That was when the power of Xbox Live was really shown. Even though, yes, it had been around for the Xbox, but, you know, the concentrated network that Xbox Live had kind of put Sony on notice. And they had, you know, less than a year to replicate that. And they didn't replicate it completely, as we all know, you know. So they rushed it. And then I guess when it was once it was up, they didn't do any more security, or they felt that, you know, everything was good. And, you know, as I've always told people, is that, you know, Sony is a hardware company. And that's why their software sometimes lags behind. You know, and conversely, Microsoft is a software company, which is why their hardware kind of lagged behind. You know, let's, you know, we can bring up all their hardware failures of the Xbox 360 and all that stuff. And that's not to say that either one of them have perfect, you know, Microsoft doesn't have perfect software and Sony doesn't have perfect hardware. But the specialties, Sony is better at the hardware than you know, than they are in the software, which is, you know, yes, their hardware finally got hacked, but it took them 5 years. So that's saying something. So I'm not trying to defend Sony. I mean, they should have done this gradually over the past few years when they're not, you know, having to pull all-nighters and make their engineers work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, whatever they're probably doing, which I'm sure that there's some real big crunch time. And there's probably been some people that have rage quit from Sony and things. So I'm not trying to, you know, quote-unquote defend Sony, but I'm just trying to say that it would have been a miracle if they had done a complete rewrite, even though they're not bringing up all the functionality at the first bit, but for them to have it only taken them 15 days from start to finish to rewrite the entire kind of code base, not really the data structures, but the code base, that would have been a miracle. I still think it would be a miracle if they're up by the end of the month. And, you know, obviously Sony is a company that has a lot of money that they can pour into resources for engineers, and they can get a lot of people on the problem. They're bringing in all these outside firms to double check their work. They're doing everything that they should, but this is a massive undertaking, and it's kind of hard for people who just play video games and, you know, have other jobs elsewhere that don't really understand how things work under the hood. It's, you know, it's not as simple as put a firewall in the database and you're done. It is not that simple. And, you know, that's lost on a lot of people because to them it really is, you know, when you've got television commercials about game programming and or game development, and I know this commercial doesn't air anymore, for one of those colleges, and they say, you know, you need to tighten up the graphics on level 3, and they have like a sound mixer board and they twist a knob and they tighten up the graphics and lean back and say that's better. That's what a lot of people actually do believe it's like. And it's not. So, you know, I it's going to be a miracle if it gets back up this month. That's not saying that they, you know, I still think they should have done more before this happened. But, you know, the situation that they're in now, I am glad I do not work at Sony. I am glad I am not an engineer at Sony. Shadow NextGen says, in your expert opinion, will PSN be ready for E3? I fully believe, and I mean, I'm not an expert on this really, but I do fully believe that some semblance of PSN will be available in the next month, next week or two. I believe by Memorial Day weekend, you will at least be able to play games online with your friends. Will the store be up? I don't know. That's a whole other ball of wax, bag of chips, whatever, is the store. I think right now, you know, I think you will be able to play online games with your friends and have your friends list back. I think you'll be able to have that by Memorial Day weekend. Don't quote me on that. I'm not taking bets. But that's kind of where I see it. They claim, allegedly, that it's ready. Like, they were going to put it up, and then a story that we're going to talk about later happened, and it kind of knocked their plans back. So Dungeon Buster says, I wouldn't be surprised if IT tried to push back with some security suggestions in the past, but were shelved on cost or implementation issues. That, I believe, is actually what happened, some of the stuff I'm going to talk about a little bit later. So I'm going to go ahead and go through some of these news stories, because all the news is about PSN. I'm not, you know, Microsoft and Nintendo are getting a reprieve right now. First, I'm not going to read this, but I wanted to point out that Sony's CEO, Howard Stringer, issued a statement, open letter to everybody, basically apologizing and all that stuff. I'm not going to read it. But I just want to point out, he played the tsunami card. I don't know why. I don't know who approved it. I mean, obviously, he's the CEO. I mean, and you would think other people would have read the letter before it went out, but he literally played the tsunami card when mentioning this. And, I mean, Howard, leave the idiotic PR comments to Jack Trenton because we expect them from him. I don't know. I mean, maybe you have the same speechwriters, but seriously, like, sitting there saying, oh, you know, Japan was a victim of a devastating earthquake and tsunami, and then we got, you know, a man-made disaster on our hands in the same paragraph. Yeah, that was not a smart move. So what are they going to be doing for, at least if you're here in the U.S., they are going to be offering some identity theft protection to all of its members. So Sony Computer Entertainment and Sony Network Entertainment International, which is the new name for all the network stuff, have made arrangements with Debix, one of the industry's most reputable identity protection firms, to offer All Clear ID Plus, at no cost to PlayStation Network and Curiosity account holders for 12 months from the time an account holder registers for the program. They will start sending out activation emails for this program over the next few days, and you'll have until June 18th to sign up to redeem your code. You will need to sign up directly through All Clear ID, not Sony's websites, because really, why would you want to use Sony's websites for details like that? And details, including step-by-step instructions for the program, will be emailed to United States PSN and Curiosity account holders soon. So if you really are concerned about your identity, you can enroll in this program for 12 months. The only thing I'm going to say is when you do this, you need to be very vigilant in 12 months because they will start charging you at the end of the 12 months. That this is kind of how these companies, they make their money, is that, you know, yeah, you'll get your 12 months free, but then they will automatically start charging. So you need to be on top of it in 11 months and cancel it if you don't want to pay for the service after that. Same thing with, you know, if you go to like freecreditreport.com and all that stuff, if you're, you know, you see all these things and, you know, yes, you get a free credit report, but if you don't cancel your account after 7 days, they start charging you monthly for credit monitoring services. And that's kind of the scam there for the free credit reports. So same kind of thing here. It's not really a scam, pretty much, but it's you need to be vigilant and you need to actually read the fine print. So if you do get the All Clear ID, that's great. I'd recommend it. But in 11 months, make sure you go through and decide if you actually want to continue paying for it or not. So that's all I'm going to say on that. So about some of the hardware concerns, the Consumerist has reported that in congressional testimony, which Sony did not attend in person, they submitted a statement, Dr. Gene Spafford of Purdue University said that Sony was using outdated software on its servers and knew about it months in advance of the recent security breaches that allowed hackers to get private information from over 100 million user accounts, even though it's 77 million, but okay, we'll accept it. According to Spafford, security experts monitoring open internet forums learned months ago that Sony was using outdated versions of the Apache web server software, which was unpatched and had no firewall installed. The issue was reported in an open forum monitored by Sony employees 2 to 3 months prior to the recent security breaches. He made his comments in a hearing convened by the House Subcommittee on Commerce, Manufacturing, and Trade. Sony was invited to participate, but declined. In a letter to the committee, Sony said it has added automated software monitoring and enhanced data security and encryption to its systems in the wake of the security breaches. So what he is saying, Apache is like one, you know, I know, and some of these are technical terms, or, you know, software packages that maybe you've never heard of if all you do is play games. Apache is really one of the most common web servers out there other than Microsoft's IIS. Apache is mainly what's used on Linux-based boxes, machines, Linux-based computers and stuff. If something's running Windows, chances, you know, IIS, Internet Information Services, is the web server that serves up the web page. And that might have more market share than Apache, but Apache is really kind of the most common one. I mean, all my servers run Apache, and my servers have firewalls installed too. So, but we also don't house people's personal data on our servers either. But, you know, it's kind of funny that my servers are technically more secure than Sony's was. So, basically what he's saying is that they did not update the servers and there was no firewall installed. Now, right before I went on the air, like 2 minutes before I went on the air, Dungeon Buster in chat posted linked me to a story on Bitmob. And basically what Bitmob is reporting on is that the community of Beyond 3D, another internet community, basically looked into this, and they're very technically savvy over there, and they dispute this. So it's very, according to Bitmob, it's fairly simple to use Google's webcache to show what version of Apache the PSN servers were using back in March. According to a page request archived by Google on March 23rd, 2011, at the time Sony was using version 2.2.17 of the software, which is still the most latest stable version of the web server available even today. So this is direct. This is in contrast to what Purdue's guy said at this hearing, because that is the latest version of Apache. So they go on to point out that the following, using a security expert, Dr. Spafford's testimony before Congress is the source for the claims that the servers were outdated and Sony knew about it. In the written statement which accompanied his testimony, he clearly states, quote, this is the guy that spoke in Congress, quote, I have no information about what protections they had in place, although some news reports indicate that Sony was running software that was badly out of date and had been warned about that risk, unquote. So that first story, apparently, like, he lied in his spoken testimony because he says something different in the written. I don't know. Why is PSN not up right now? Well, apparently, the hackers have not completed making their points. And also, there are, you know, Sony is starting to point their finger at Anonymous, which is the hacktivist group that, you know, usually originates on, like, 4chan and places like that. But they have claimed, like, their Anon Ops, which are kind of like the quote-unquote head guys, have denied involvement, but that doesn't mean that other people who happen to also have done stuff with Anonymous, you know, because of the way Anonymous is, if somebody says they're anonymous. That's basically what it is. But it's not the majority of Anonymous that have done it, but they have stated that, you know, oh, well, we're going to do a third attack. So PSN wasn't even up yet, and they were going to attack it this weekend, and apparently what they did, Reuters reports that Sony said on Saturday it removed from the internet the names and partial addresses of 2,500 sweepstakes contestants that had been stolen by hackers and posted on a website, and said it did not know when it could start the PlayStation Network. So essentially, the data came from customers who entered a 2001 product sweepstakes contest. The list did not include information on credit cards, social security numbers, or passwords. According to Sony, let's see here, according to a company official from Sony, quote, the website was out of date and inactive when discovered as part of the continued attacks on Sony, unquote. So essentially, they're still going at it. Now, honestly, I don't know what the point is now. I mean, obviously, if you listen to the show, you know that there are people out there that really don't want people associating with Sony. There was a really strange email I got a couple weeks ago, around the same time that the GeoHots thing started, stating that, you know, if you're not against Sony, you are against all gamers. And it was a weird email. It was kind of a threat. He never followed anything up on it. But, you know, there are people out there that don't want people playing games on a Sony system. And apparently, you know, maybe they have some of the same methodology where they don't like Sony because of the rootkit thing on the CDs that happened a couple years ago, you know, or the removal of other OS. Or Sony's done a lot of things that have angered people who are for consumer rights on electronics devices and things like that. So they could be, you know, forcing a boycott of Sony's products, because Anonymous does call for a boycott on Sony products, and this is kind of forcing it on the consumers. And so this may be why they're doing it. A lot of people, you know, of course, also what they're doing is that they're, you know, pissing off 77 million gamers that all they want to do is play SOCOM online. And these guys, I mean, they don't care. They want Sony to go down, and, you know, you should go play other games. They'd rather you go play Tux Racer or something where you're not constrained by Microsoft or Sony or Nintendo or any of these closed systems. Shadow Next Gen says, imagine if Sony had hired GeoHot to head up their security, we might be able to play on PSN right now. Maybe. But, here's the thing. Now that I'm thinking about it, GeoHot is more of kind of a hardware and low-level hacker. The PSN attack was very high level. It was basic. It wasn't even using PS3s. They got into the database through the an unpatched Apache server. So it's kind of like it's not GeoHot's area of expertise. He's an expert on on getting hardware devices to do what he wants them to do. And this was not a hardware thing at all. It was all software. Ronma says, it would not surprise me that if during the DDoS attack that someone with Anonymous left something behind which started this. Well, it's kind of hard when you're doing a DDoS attack. The whole point is you can't access the server, so you can't actually leave anything behind. Apparently, during the attack, Sony did say that a member of Anonymous, or whoever attacked and got in actually did leave a file on the server stating that they are anonymous and they are Legion. Breakman says, who isn't mad at Sony right now? There are some people that kind of understand and aren't necessarily mad. They are disappointed and stuff, but there are some people that aren't mad. They would rather have them do it right rather than do it quickly. And that's kind of what they're trying to do. And then there's a lot of people that just want to play games online and they don't care how insecure it is. Speaking of games, why don't I talk about a game? This is a PS3 game, which is going to be kind of fun. So I'm not going to be giving like a full review because obviously I can only play half the game right now. MotorStorm Apocalypse. I've been looking forward to this game because I enjoy the MotorStorm series. And I don't know why I do, but I do. And you'll understand why I say that a little bit later on in this review. But the first thing I do want to say is that during all this, the update servers for PlayStation Network are actually still up. Because I bought the game yesterday. I was finally able to get it yesterday, put my disc in the drive, and immediately I had to download an update from the internet. So you can still get your patches for your games over PlayStation Network. That is not gone. That's probably the only part of PSN that's still up, is you can get an update. The game itself, this is the racing game. It was delayed because it was going to come out right after the devastating earthquake and tsunami that Howard Stringer inappropriately used to talk about the Sony attacks. And so they delayed it for sensitivity, and then, you know, we had the tornado outbreak here in the southeast, which thankfully I missed, but I know a lot of people that didn't miss it. But they're still bringing it out now, so it's kind of hard to release a game like this that's all about natural disasters and racing through them and not offend somebody. But the game itself, the racing game, it reminds me a lot of Split Second. Split Second was the premise of Split Second was that it was a movie. And all these special effects were happening around you, and in Split Second, you could actually trigger all the special effects that change the track. This, you don't trigger them. They are triggered in the game. But it's the same kind of thing where you'll be racing along, and then something will happen, and then that changes the track. The whole point is learning the race and how it changes. That's the key to winning, because no two laps are going to be the same. And one thing to say on this is that this is the first game that I've ever seen that actually differentiates between a track and a race. Because a lot of racing games, you have it's basically, okay, it has 20 tracks, you learn those 20 tracks, and there you go. And they're kind of, you know, they may have some of the same backgrounds, same landscape and all that stuff, but they're different tracks. What MotorStorm does is it has more races than tracks. So it's the same track, but each race does different things to the track, which is kind of interesting, where, you know, they say you're racing a race, not necessarily racing on a track. So, you know, yeah, this track is used in these five different races, but each race is different, even though it's technically using the exact same track. So it's really neat the way that they did that, and a lot of the cinematic stuff. In terms of the graphics, there was one time I got a huge slowdown when stuff was happening and I was right on top of it. But other than that, the frame rate's been solid. But there was that one time the frame rate really dipped to like 10 frames per second. And it was kind of hard to deal with. But every other time, the frame rate's been pretty solid, even with other stuff going on. But I think what happened is I was actually like right on top of whatever huge event was happening, and it was bogging everything down. So there is a multiplayer component. I'll talk about what it theoretically has later, but I'm going to cover the story mode. This does have a story mode. It's told in motion comics. And essentially the story, why you're racing, is that the city, that's the name of the city, it's the city, capital T, capital C, the city. The scientists have determined that the big one is going to hit the city, nameless city. And they have ordered the evacuation of all of the residents. So but the MotorStorm team, which is known for their, you know, extreme off-road racing, is taken into the city and started racing around. And so they have this huge festival, and there's people in the private security firms and military people, and some people have stayed behind and don't like these racers. So essentially, the apocalypse is occurring in this city. You know, earthquakes, buildings, and people shooting at you, causing other things to happen, and you're racing around in the city, and it's a big two-day festival. So, and they actually tell it in a really interesting way. There's a cinematic, the story mode begins with actually the cinematic opening. You're racing through, and they're showing you the credits while you're racing through, and then that's also how it teaches you the controls and everything, and it was a really interesting way to do the opening credits, where you're actually racing the game, and all the credits are on the screen with you. And it's telling you a story while you're doing this race and learning the thing. And it was, I thought it was one of the best integrations in a racing game I've ever seen of, like, the opening sequence, because right when you finish, that's when the title card comes up. So it was really well done. It does some presentation things that are really neat. Like, if you're going to the finish line and it's really close between you and other people, it will actually change to a slow-motion camera and show you how, you know, who gets in first and stuff. And so it heightens the excitement. And I really did like that. And basically, the story mode, it's three. You follow three different characters over this two-day festival. So you do the rookie character first, and then you go back in time, you know, back, because basically it's a movie. Guy is documenting it. And so he shows, okay, here's this one guy. And then there's more stories here. And then you start again at the beginning of the festival and play again as the next guy on pro mode, and then expert mode is the last guy. And this is not really a spoiler, but this it kind of could be. Obviously, the big one happens at the end of the event, and you get to go through this three times. And it was the last race isn't even really a race. It's just you're trying to get to the aircraft carrier to get out of there before the big one happens. So the earthquake is happening. You're outrunning it. You're trying to get through. Everybody else is trying to get through, too, and so they're going to, you know, stomp all over you to try to get you to not go to the carrier. And at the end, you're flying across the bridge, and it was really well done. It was kind of frustrating because I didn't make it to the carrier the first two times I could see it, but I was like 2 seconds too late. But it's really interesting the way that they wove some story elements into the race as well, in the prologue and the epilogue. Basically, the prologue and the epilogue of each character is more story cinematic based, and then you've got all the races and elimination stuff in between. So I had this big grin on my face, just like I had with Split Second when I started playing this game. And unfortunately, that disappeared pretty quickly because I was like, man, this game is great. I love it. I love it. I love it. And then I got to the first rooftop race. So in the right in the middle of the rookie character's story. Now, as before I got to the rookie character, this particular race, I was getting first in all the races. So, you know, once I got the controls down, I was getting, you know, first in each race, and so I was, you know, feeling pretty good about myself. Then I got to this race, and this is like smack dab in the middle of the rookie campaign. And you're on rooftops. It's one of the tracks is you're jumping across rooftops. And then the different races have different buildings falling, you know, but anyway, you're flying across rooftops. And that's when my smile disappeared on this game, was that rooftop race. They know it too, because they give you a truck for this race and then tell you the trucks can't fly, so you may want to stay off the edges of the rooftops. And all you're doing is jumping from rooftop to rooftop. It's four-wheel parkour, if you will. And it took me 9 times to qualify. Now, to qualify, you have to get 5th or higher, and there's 16 racers. And it took me 9 times just to get 4th. Which is what, and then I finally just like went on. And then after this race, I, you know, was getting first again in all the, so it was like, this is like a difficulty jump, like right in the middle of nowhere. And then the difficulty gets back down to what it is everywhere else. I felt that, you know, that race was improperly timed, and they gave you the worst car to do it and said, hey, good luck. And I was not the only person. Lord Moon, who actually also writes for on allgames.com, he was, because I tweeted, I'm like, man, I'm loving this. I hope I don't get disappointed and lose my smile like I did in Split Second. He's like, oh, just wait for the rooftop race. And then I got to the rooftop race, and I'm like, yeah, you're right. So that kind of dampened my spirits, but I soldiered on. I did finally get through it. So basically, then it started to become the exercise in frustration, which is actually what's happened with every other MotorStorm with me. And this is why I don't understand why I keep coming back to it, because it always turns into an exercise in frustration. The collision detection with some of the debris in the walls, it's a little wonky, which is a technical term, by the way, wonky. I would crash and not know what I crashed into. I'm like next to a wall, but I didn't hit the wall. Sometimes I've also, you know, wrecked on a tiny crack in the ground. You know, and I'm in a big truck, so I should be able to get over that crack. But apparently I wrecked on this little tiny crack in the ground. And it always happens at the worst times, too. And sometimes the collidable and the non-collidable debris look exactly the same at times. So I'm like colliding into things, and something looks exactly like what I just collided into. And no, I'm sorry, you can't collide. You know, that's, you know, you're going to wreck on that one. Even in like a big truck, and I'm like, you know, that looks the same. And see, the thing is, there's no gamma brightness settings in the game, so you'd have to do it from your TV. And it's very hard to see things at the nighttime races or if they're in shadows. And there's no gamma correction or anything in the game, so it's up to you to change your TV settings to see it. For an arcade racer, the cornering I have found is next to non-existent. There are obviously ways. They tell you, you know, there is a handbrake and you can use it, but I've never gotten to use it all that well. And I mean, I can play the realistic racers and I can corner just fine in those. But for an arcade racer, there's very little cornering. It's its own beast. And I guess once you do figure it out and figure out how to boost out of a turn, you'll do fine. But that's kind of hard to do. Now, the good thing is, the AI does make mistakes, just like you do. They'll overheat and blow up, and you know they'll overshoot a corner and fall off the side. So, I mean, the AI is just as mistake-prone as you are, especially in the early races. Unfortunately, there is a lot of rubber band AI, and it's very apparent. The first race I did, when I was still learning the controls and not expecting to win, I got, like, third place or something. And, I mean, I was like, okay, I'm going to try it again and get first. And I got first, and my first place time was 20 seconds slower than the third place time I had gotten before. So there definitely is rubber band AI at work. It's to keep it exciting and all that stuff, but sometimes it can get really apparent. And in terms of load times, there is no install to the hard drive option available to you. And the load times to load the race, they're pretty long, about 30 seconds worth. So multiplayer, obviously I wasn't able to play it online. It looks like you can customize your car. You can even put decals on your car. There are perks, and it works like the loadout system in Blur, where you could actually like put three different things on your car, and it will help you in the race. You can wager chips, and that's kind of your online currency. You can gain levels. There's leaderboards, all that stuff. Obviously, I didn't get to try any of that. And there's a card in the box. This is funny. There's a card in the box for free items that you have to redeem over PSN, and there's like a time limit on it. So that's pretty fun. Luckily, the time limit's a year. So hopefully PSN will be up the next year so you can redeem that. So in terms of, you know, what I think of it, obviously, you know, I haven't been able to play the online stuff. It's a frustrating game for an arcade racer. And it gets frustrating quickly. I expect all arcade racing games to get frustrating. This one, you know, it's like within the first hour, it starts getting frustrating. And so I would not pay full price for this game. That's not the grade I would give it. But because that's the way I score games, is I say how much they're worth rather than actually giving a grade on it. And I don't think this is worth the $60 yet. Maybe once online play gets in, because it looks like there's a lot of online features integrated even in the single player. Maybe that may change my mind. I'll let you know once we're no longer under siege. It does have four-player split screen, so that's good. It's got four-player multiplayer split screen, so you can play that. And I may actually play that with some friends this weekend, so who knows? Maybe that'll change my mind, but I haven't been able to do that yet. But just on the single player alone, it disappointed me just like Split Second did, because it looked so great, it looked so awesome, and then it started kicking me when I was down, and that was not nice. So we are going to take a quick music break and then take your calls about probably PSN stuff. That's probably what we'll talk about. That'll be fun. You're listening to the Bobby Blackwolf Show on All Games Radio, online at allgames.com.
Hey, this is Frank Branches from RP Grinders, and you're listening to the video game voice of reason, Bobby Blackwolf, on the Bobby Blackwolf Show. Listen up, heathens.
Frank Branches. Music in the background is from his favorite game of all time, Radiant Historia. It's got great graphics. If you want to send a bumper, you can either Skype us or you can email me, feedback@bobbyblackwolf.com. You can email me an MP3 and I'll put music behind it. And you can be part of the show. I did get another bumper over from a voicemail during the week. We'll probably be playing that one next week. So thank you, everybody, that's sending me bumpers now. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. Get a 14-day free trial, get a free audiobook, and that's yours to keep even if you cancel before the end of the trial. There are several great books about video games on there. World War Z is also a really great audiobook. I haven't been able to really listen to many more audiobooks on there, but you might find something that you may like. So you can take a free audiobook and the free trial at audibletrial.com/Bobby Blackwolf. So the phone lines are now open. Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype. 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. You can call in and talk about PSN, MotorStorm, if something's been going on Nintendo or Xbox, I don't know. And, you know, hey, now's the time. This is the part of the show where I open it up to our chat room audience, and they tell me what they think of anything, or what they think I should have covered or should have said, or usually anything else like that. So we do have a call here on the line. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, Bobby, how's it going? It's Ranma.
Ranma, what's up, man? What's on your mind?
Same old, same old. It looks like I'm probably the only other guy listening tonight that has your back on all of this, because, you know, I'm a tech guy, too, dealing with hardware, software. And my thing is that when they announced all the next-gen consoles were coming out, Sony was like, we got to hurry up and get out there. So, to me, they rushed the PS3. They rushed PSN. And they just threw it together and got it up and running. And all they were doing was just patching it here and there, here and there. And someone's like, we got problems down here. We need to fix all it. No, patch it here and there. And then they get hit with the DDoS, which tore everything down. And they're like...
So, no. I mean, I don't blame the guys in the trenches for this. Because, you know, they probably, even me, like when I've worked in things, you know, I've always had the best intention. I knew exactly how I wanted to, you know, think we should do things. And I'm just the programmer. And then, you know, I say, well, here's what we really need to do. And they're like, well, we got to talk to the money guys. And they don't want to pay for that.
Exactly. So we're gonna have to do it. Yeah. Exactly. I worked at one company where the same thing happened. And after I left, everything fell apart. And I was like, well, I told you guys you needed this, but you didn't want to listen. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I mean, I don't blame the guys in the trenches. A lot of people are, like, you know, trying to blame everybody at Sony for this. I don't blame the guys in the trenches. I blame the guys that the management that said, no, we don't need to worry about security on it. We don't need to do any more patches. We haven't been attacked yet. We're Sony. Our hardware is unhackable. They haven't hacked in yet. You know, so why, you know, we don't really need to worry about this. We need to try to do these other things to catch up with Microsoft.
Yeah, and now they're paying the price for all these class action lawsuits popping up out of here and there. Mm-hmm. And you know they're going to try to settle out by throwing the people, like, here, have this, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, and somebody was saying that I think Sony stands to lose like $1 billion with a B from all this.
If I'm not mistaken, I read an article last week where there was a class action lawsuit coming out of Canada valued around $1 billion.
Yeah. And so. I mean, between, you know, having to probably pay overtime for all their, you know, all the engineers. I mean, I don't know how many of them are in Japan or how many of them are here. But, you know, it's, you know, having to pay all that, you know, and all these lawsuits and pay all these security firms and the Sony's losing a lot of money on this. So if that was their aim, well done. Like, you're getting Sony to hemorrhage so much money on this.
Exactly. And another thing before I disappear, don't blame the hackers for this. Real hackers don't go in causing malicious damage. Mm-hmm. That's not their job. They find stuff. If they find an issue or something like that, most hackers are going to contact the company like, oh, I found this. Mm-hmm. You need to fix that. Half the time, they'll ignore that email. The other half, they'll patch it. And who knows, they'll end up getting a job out of it.
Yeah.
These are wannabe hackers who think they're so hot. They're trying to do this and do that and cause damage to their own personal game. So... Those aren't real hackers, you know?
All right. Well, thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it.
No problem, dude. Take care.
So the phones are now lighting up, so we have another call here. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, what's up, Blackwolf? This is Kaijudo. Let me just turn down my my feed. Okay, I'm just calling real quickly to disagree with your previous caller on one thing that he mentioned.
Okay.
The fact of Sony rushing things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, you know, let me just clarify this. I'm not a Sony fanboy. I'm not a Microsoft fanboy. I'm not a Wii fanboy. I'm just a gamer. I just love to play games, okay? So let me just get that clear. But if anyone rushed anything, I would say Microsoft did. I think that Sony and Nintendo released their consoles at, like, a timely manner. Like, if you look back to the previous gen, to this gen, it was a timely manner. The only one that actually came out a lot sooner than everyone else was Xbox, because was the 360, because if you remember, mm-hmm. Xbox was the last to come out, and then all of a sudden, next generation, they're the first to come out. You know, so okay. I totally disagree with the whole rushing thing. I don't think that that's fair to say.
Well, no, I mean, I wouldn't say they rushed the PS3. I think, and this is where you're disagreeing with me, too, on this, they rushed PlayStation Network because they didn't realize that was a big deal until the 360 came out and they saw Xbox Live take off. Because Xbox Live on the original Xbox was nothing really to write home about. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the 360 came out. Yes, maybe the 360 was rushed in your mind, but for whatever, you know, basically it came out a year before the PS3 was going to come out, and they said, oh crap, we need to do something with this. And it takes time to build a big service like PlayStation Network and Xbox Live. And I think that they did not, because they wanted to release the PS3 at the time that they did, they needed to have PSN up at that time. And so I think they did rush, and I think the addition of PlayStation Network was a last-minute addition in the grand scheme of things in the development of the console.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that, but I mean, to take it back to what actually happened to them, you know, this wasn't like a system failure. This was, you know, a hacker or hackers coming in there to totally disrupt their system.
It was
so I think
their network. It was basically the PlayStation Network that got hacked.
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
that's what I think was rushed. Not necessarily the PlayStation 3, but the network, all-encompassing network. I think that was rushed.
I understand what you're saying there, but pretty much what I'm saying is that, this was due to hacking. This wasn't necessarily just their, I'm not a programmer, so I'm probably going to say something completely stupid, but it wasn't like the code that they put in there or something. It was just basically that they got hacked by hackers, and it was an unfortunate thing. And I think that, we as a consumer should definitely support them, because they are trying to, watch our back, with trying to make sure that our identities, they don't get stolen or anything like that. Yeah. So I think we should be supporting Sony more right now, and not necessarily patting these hackers on the back or giving them a free ride, because it was them that disrupted the system.
I don't think they're getting a free ride if the FBI is looking for them.
Oh yeah, of course. No, I mean, on that side of things, yes. But I mean, like, as far as customers and gamers, they seem to just want to go after Sony for this, and I don't really think that we should have that mob mentality against Sony. I think that it should be pointed towards these hackers that did it.
All right. Thanks for your call, man.
All right.
The phones are lighting up, so we got another call here. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is Pimp Method.
Pimp Method, welcome back. What's up?
Thanks. I'm doing all right. I would like to know something. Mm-hmm. I keep on hearing various people talking about, like, whole PC gaming is dead, but how come we keep on seeing like all these PC companies, from like song car makers to like the actual PC makers, keep on promoting their product for like various gaming conventions, and they are even like sponsoring like various gaming leagues and also gaming teams for games such as StarCraft.
Because PC gaming isn't dead. That's why. I mean, people have always said PC gaming is dead. It isn't dead. It's just they've got to do a different type of model, different type of payment model to get paid. But no, PC gaming most definitely is not dead. Steam has done a lot to resurrect the notion of PC gaming. So no, that's why. It's because there's still a lot of money to be made in PC gaming.
Okay, then that's all.
All right.
Thanks for answering my question.
All right, thank you for calling in. So I'm gonna, because a lot of other people tried to call in, so we're gonna open up the phone lines. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1. A lot of people have been trying to call in tonight. Finally they started coming in. For like the first like 3 minutes I got no calls, and now everybody's calling in. So there we go. So we're going to take this call. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hi, yeah, this is Spazinator.
Spazinator, what's up? What's on your mind?
I just wanted to touch on, what Ron was saying during his call.
Do you have anything to add to it?
I kind of disagree with what I was saying, that the hackers shouldn't be blamed. My mentality is that although, granted, Sony does have some blame in this whole mess, the bulk of the blame does go towards the hackers. You know, the best analogy I can probably use to get help make my point understandable would be is like saying that if you left your front door unlocked for whatever reason, it's suddenly okay for these hackers or someone to go into your house and rob you blind. Obviously, the argument wouldn't fly. And likewise, just because Sony's security and whatnot may not have been adequate enough, that doesn't mean that these hackers have license to go in, look around, steal information, or what have you.
I don't think the hackers think that they're doing something on the side of the law. I think they were trying to send, do whatever they wanted to Sony, and make sure that they lost money for all these perceived things that they have done for freedom of electronic users. So I don't think that they're trying to say what they did was legal, but I think there is blame on both sides because Sony should not have left the front door unlocked.
Now, give a counterpoint to what you were just saying. Now, even if these hackers had a gripe against Sony for whatever reason they may have, don't you think that there were other better ways of airing their grievances against Sony rather than seriously irritating 77 plus PlayStation?
They're trying to send a message to you because that's kind of been their thing. They've been saying all this stuff ever since the Sony rootkit debacle on the CDs. That where they've been saying don't support Sony, it's not it's not, and now they're trying to say, see, we told you it's not safe for you to support Sony, and that's what they're trying to do. So they've done all that other stuff. They've been going for years and years and years. The anti-Sony crowd has been around for years, and they've been trying to get people to understand their side of things, and this is their way of getting your attention. So anyway, we got other calls coming in. Thanks for calling.
All right, have a good one.
So I'm going to open up the phones one more time. There was a guy that has been trying to call in for 20 minutes now. Try to get him in real quick before we change over to OLR. We're going to have a short call with OLR tonight. Orange Lounge Radio will be up next. Billy OK in chat says, how is this not both parties' fault? Anyone says one side's fault is just being daft. I think that, and I agree with him. I mean, it's, Sony shouldn't have left the door unlocked and the hackers shouldn't have gone in and opened the door and took what they wanted to take. So here it is. We are our last call of the evening. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Tyrone Hawk.
Tyrone Hawk, what's up? What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, just telling you that remember, I don't know if you saw that news, that when the first attack came, there was this report that there was that the security technicians in PSN, they were saying, no, it was nothing. I don't know if you read about it. Mm-hmm. And that's a sure way to piss off the hackers.
Yeah.
That's a way to say, ha ha, you didn't do nothing you didn't do nothing against me. And you're just calling all the sharks suddenly, mm-hmm. and you find yourself that you're surrounded completely by them.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing about this is that Sony never learned to never taunt Happy Funball. They mm-hmm. kind of taunted and postured, and that was a PR blunder on their part to me. You never taunt them because they can always do more. That's why, maybe I don't agree with Anonymous, but I've unfortunately been on the receiving end of Anonymous's wrath from a little tiny portion of Anonymous, like five people. And that hurt. And if just five people can do that, that's why, I do kind of respect what they can do, even if it is script kiddie type stuff. But you don't taunt them. You never taunt Happy Funball.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Also, there is one thing that we are talking about restoring PSN functionality and all that. People are talking about what's the next steps for Sony, because mm-hmm. they have to they have to reward all the players. They have mm-hmm. to recover the trust in them. Yeah. Because at this moment, I know that, let's say it's right. I mean, people just saying, oh, I'm going to throw my PS3 and just buy an Xbox. Mm-hmm. Of course, I am an Xbox fan and I like that. But no, that's not the point. You're not throwing away something that is such a great console because of all this happening. I mean, this thing has to go up one day.
Yeah. So,
but what really concerns us, and let me tell you, they really hit the jackpot. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have hackers now have 77 million email accounts that yep. they are going to offer to the whole internet for spammers. So all of these people are going to get hit a lot.
And
by spammers.
You know the great thing about that? Like, the only good thing about that is it devalues the price of email address and credit card numbers. Because with that many out there, it's going to lower the cost for everybody.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Like, so I mean, because, like, if they do, like, let's say, I mean, we still don't know if they got credit card information, but credit cards on the black market, from what I read, it's about $1.50 to $2 per credit card number. But wow. if they put 2.8 million credit card or 77 million or whatever. But if they put 2.8 million credit cards and try to sell them on the black market, now every credit card number, the value of them is going to go down to like 50 cents to a dollar. So it's actually going to hurt the hackers for them to release it.
Right.
So cool. It's the whole supply and demand. When you get a whole lot more supply out there, the demand goes down. And so they could wind up shooting themselves in the foot a little bit. I mean, it's still terrible. It's credit card theft. But, you know, if they release these 77 million email addresses, that's going to actually devalue email addresses on the black market.
So 1 point for the good guys, then.
I'd rather not have that point. I'd rather any points, but that is something. Anyway, thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. Take care, Bobby.
So that is it. We ran long. I'm so sorry. Coming up next here. On All Games Radio is Orange Lounge Radio, three people out in Sacramento, California. We're going to have a real quick call with them because it is 9 o'clock, and I know that the OL Army really wants me to get off the air so they can get on. So we're going to check in with them real quick just to see what's going on, see if they're still playing Portal 2 instead of listening to the stream. I don't know. See what they're going to be talking about tonight other than PSN, because there's got to be something else that happened. Other than PSN this week. And I am confident that OLR will know exactly what happened. So, Sacramento, are you guys there?
Yes, we're here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing good. Sorry I'm running long. I apologize to the OL Army on that.
That's all right. It happens.
So, did anything else happen other than PSN this week?
Yes, there has been some other news. There's been rumors about a brand new Xbox system, which, well, of course, derp, they're working on a new Xbox.
Of course.
Of course, for a while. But apparently a dev kit has been sighted out in the wild, so rumors abound about all of this. Also, in Nintendo's camp, Club Nintendo made a pretty recent change to their privacy policy that has some people's feathers ruffled, especially when you consider what's going on at Sony right now in regards to personal information. So, there's stuff going on, not just Sony.
All right. Well, I count on you to cover all that stuff.
Well, and, we 3 hours to do it, so sometimes...
and hopefully nobody will get shot in the eye during your show tonight.
That would be nice, because it did kind of derail things last week. But hey, there is a real world out there outside gaming.
Yes,
How long did it take for the gaming mods to finally put that whole Osama bin, you know, capture all this stuff in all the war games? It took like, what, 2 days?
Yeah, well, Kuma War, which is they're the company that does like they've work with the military and release that stuff. I think they had their raid mod up in a couple days, and then I know that there's a Counter-Strike map. Already up of the compound.
Of course. That's the way the I don't want to say the hacking, the modding community works.
Yes.
That's the way they work. Yes. This is how we roll.
So I'm going to go ahead and get off the air so you guys can start. But,
no worries, Bobby.
So thanks so much, and enjoy talking about stuff that's not PSN.
Thank you as always, Bobby, but of course we do have to get on our ranty bands about PSN. Just a little bit.
All right. Thanks so much. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. OrangeLoungeRadio.com. is their podcast, right up here next here on All Games Radio. So that's it. I'm going to try to get out of here this week. Next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, we will be here, hopefully not talking about PlayStation Under Siege Day 26, I think is what it would be. Hopefully that's not the case. Right here on All Games Radio at allgames.com. You can leave us a voicemail or a bumper, Skype line, Bobby Blackwell Show, toll-free, 1-888-36-GAME-1. Or on our site, BobbyBlackWolf.com, Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf, or just come out here and be a part of the All Games Network. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters, so thank you very much, DC Nate, GK128, The Rob D, The Blue Guy, Eswat, Funnydale, Havoc978, Heck, Kitsune, Maximilian Octocombo, Shadow Next Gen, Shadows Liar, THK, Tigerclaw, Alt, Billy OK, Bozo, Breakman, Buckfush, Burr, Chick, Cita Bria, D'Artagnan, Deadman Wade, Dungeon Buster, Eric K, Fifth Dream, who's it's his birthday today, I need to kick him, Firecube, Frank Branches, Game Guru, Havoc978, Blender, J. Irv, Kaijudo, Kazan, Nuxonic, Maginomicon, Melted General, MXC, Necromoss, Ranma, Ruben, Sean, Silver Sonic, Six, Sky, Spazinator, Spyro, Subzi, Tedekin, THK, Toagak, Visid, What Up G, Wilcon, and Zappy. So that is it for me. I'm going to try to get out of here. And maybe I'll get my smile back in MotorStorm later. I don't know. Maybe when online comes up and you guys all wreck me, and then I'll cry again. And that would be bad. Happy Mother's Day.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of All Games Radio or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios for All Games Radio.